This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Former Republican State Representative Lawrence Wenke is running for Congress. Coming up, we'll talk with the Libertarian candidate in Southwest Michigan's 6th District. But first, Jim Hodzma has served for 8 years on the Calhoun County Commission. He is now the Democratic candidate for State House in the district that includes the cities of Battle Creek and Albion, as well as several townships in Calhoun County. Hodzma is running for the 62nd State House seat that's currently held by Republican John Bison. Jim Hodzma, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation to be here, Gordon.
Please introduce yourself to the audience. Tell us about yourself.
I'm the son of home and foreign missionaries. They're the best field organizers I've ever encountered in my life. I and Betsy have 4 children, a daughter who recently graduated from Albion College, and 2 kids in college, one at Ferris, one at Albion College, and one who is a junior at Lakeview High School in Battle Creek. I've practiced law for 32 years. I've practiced law with a regional labor firm for the past 29 plus years. I've been in the Battle Creek field office of that law firm since 1994. I'm involved in many not-for-profits like the Art Center, the Urban League, the Haven, which is our equivalent to Loaves and Fishes in Battle Creek, and am around the community in many not-for-profit roles. I've served on the Calhoun County Board, as you've indicated, for 8 years, and really enjoyed my opportunity to serve, learned a lot about local government by reason of that service, and determined after many people asked me throughout 2015 to consider this race, that I would run in this seat this year because of my concern of how Michigan isn't the Michigan I knew as a child or as a young man.
So what would you like to do if you are elected to the State House?
First, I would like to do no additional harm. That is to say, I am very concerned about one-party rule and how it hasn't worked in Michigan for 5 3/4 years. Presently, Governor Snyder, the House of Representatives, the State Senate, and the Michigan Supreme Court majority are solidly Republican. And as a consequence, I think we've had failed leadership in many ways, demonstrated by the Flint water crisis, the Detroit public schools miasma, the Grand Rapids Home for the Veterans fiasco. So I am first, trying to ensure that we have a circuit breaker, some kind of firewall, as it were, in the State House with a Democratic majority to ensure that we can stop some of that mischief which has gone on in the past 5 3/4 years and bring some other voices, voices that are relevant, not just perceived as irrelevant because we're in a constant minority, voices perceived as relevant to bring some compromise to some important public issues. I'd also like to make sure that Elliot Larson is extended to the LGBTQ community. I would additionally like to make sure that there is restoration of some tax credits, like the homestead tax credit or the per child tax credit, child care tax credit, and some tax relief for seniors in relation to some tax modification and providence of some tax credit for seniors as well.
So if you were to put those tax credits back in, the ones that you mentioned, child care, homestead, et cetera, would you want to get more tax revenue from somewhere else to make up for what the state would not be pulling in if those credits are again back on the table?
Yes, I think that there have been corporate loopholes which have evolved in this 5 3/4 years under one-party rule, which I would like to rein in and make sure that working families are paying less in proportion to large corporations and the wealthiest people in our taxpaying community who would pay a greater share vis-a-vis the working class and working people of our state.
The Michigan legislature is working on a rewrite of the state's energy policy. If you were there, and the assumption right now is it will probably be something that comes up in lame duck, so maybe done before the new legislature takes office. But if you were there and were considering an energy policy for Michigan, what would be the broad parameters that would have to be in place to get your vote?
I'd want to make sure that there's a greater emphasis on renewable energy by next decade, so we can prioritize a 20% target of renewable energy in relation to traditional energy sources like coal-burning sources. That would be an issue which would get my vote. Sam Singh, who's a House representative, has a bill pending presently. That's one of the hallmarks of that, and that's what I would be most looking for in relation to an energy bill, putting more emphasis on renewable energy while at the same time ensuring that by traditional energy we have assurance that our grid system isn't going to break down. So I want reliability considered, as well as the emphasis on targeting a 20% renewable.
There was a group, a couple different groups actually, which were trying to collect petition signatures to legalize marijuana, perhaps for recreational purposes in Michigan. That did not make the ballot. But if it were there, would you support it?
Public safety is the primary concern in this debate. I would wish input from all public safety agencies in relation to what they would consider would be the best for our communities. I would also want to have a legislative committee established to see how well or poorly legalization of recreational marijuana has fared in states like Colorado and the state of Washington. It's on many different states' ballots this cycle, and I think it will be interesting to see how many more people that kind of ballot initiative brings to the polling place in relation to Michigan, which uncharacteristically has no ballot proposals this cycle.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans, speaking with Jim Hodzma. He is the Democratic candidate for State House in the 62nd District. That includes the cities of Battle Creek and Albion, as well as several townships in Calhoun County. Would you propose any reforms to the state's auto insurance laws?
No. I will tell you that in 2011, the Michigan legislature and then Governor Snyder signed remarkably draconian public act changes into the workers' disability compensation law, which has remarkably changed the relationship of employers vis-a-vis employees. It's very difficult for a workers' disability compensation claimant to collect workers' disability compensation benefits because of those changes. The grand bargain made in the 19-teens in relation to business and labor has been broken by that 2011 law. And I think that any change in the no-fault law would be an abandonment of the rights of consumers vis-a-vis large insurance companies in our community. We have an auto no-fault law that's intended to compensate victims of car crashes. And I think that it should remain intact and shouldn't be decimated in the same way that the workers' disability compensation law has been destroyed.
You know that the other side of that argument will be that Michigan has some of the highest rates for auto insurance in the nation. Is that just something that we live with in order to have this system, which does allow people to get lifetime care if they are injured in a catastrophic accident?
Nobody ever thinks he or she is going to be injured. And what happens in workers' disability compensation context or auto crash context is people complain about premiums that they pay. Employers complain about premiums that they pay and how they must reduce compensation by salary or wages to workers. But when the worker or the motorist is in fact injured, that's when it's needed most. So I absolutely am someone who wants to make sure that we providently safeguard those who are injured. Otherwise, the catastrophic injuries fall back on the taxpayers. Those people who are catastrophically injured become the ward of taxpayers, because they would undoubtedly fall to the Medicaid system.
So you're saying that what we're talking about here when people say that they want to reform the auto insurance system is we're shifting money around, is what it ultimately comes down to.
It's spreading the cost. It's trying to ensure that consumers are protected in a way that spreads cost most evenly around the most people. What ought to be done is there ought to be more investigation into how insurance companies are spending the premiums that individuals are paying those insurers, and less focus on how much premium is being paid, thinking about how no one is going to have some kind of car crash connected injury. There has to be an investigation in relation to why these premiums go up and whether they're actually being spent on injured motorists, or whether they're being spent on marketing of insurers, or being spent on litigation cost of the insurer's defense counsel.
The Michigan Campaign Finance Network compiled a list of the state house races which have seen the most money raised combined between the two candidates. The 62nd district ranked third. Should that make people in this district feel, glad that there's a lot of attention in this particular district, or should they be concerned about the amount of money on both sides?
The Democratic majority goes through the 62nd district. We don't take back the Democratic majority of the state house unless we win the 62nd district. It was a call to arms to me that I heeded when I determined to run late in 2015. This is a district which will be, as battleground states are often called, a battleground district. It's a district where both sides will spend a considerable amount of money. We're trying to equalize that which has been raised by one Michigan family, the DeVos family, which has spent tens of thousands of dollars on behalf of John Bison's race in two different cycles, and done it in a context in which they live more than 50 miles away and have no direct connectedness to Battle Creek, Albion, and the surrounding townships. So this should not be an alarm for the citizens of Calhoun County in relation to the numbers of dollars raised. I think they're going to get a lot of attention, but it should be an alarm in relation to campaign finance, because so much money can be raised by one family and rich individuals. The Republicans raised the individual donation from $500 to $1,000. Most of my donors can't meet that $1,000 threshold. Many donors of the Republican candidate can meet that. So I definitely think that people need to pay greater attention to what's going on in our legislature in relation to campaign finance reform in that context.
You've mentioned a couple times that you want to see the Democrats take the majority in the state house. I'm sure that there are a number of people who study maps and do political analysis who could certainly come up with a number of scenarios where you are elected to the state house, but the Democrats don't get enough seats to take control. So if that's the way this plays out, do you think you can still be an effective representative for the 62nd district?
Yes. I've done that for six of my 8 years on the county board. Our Calhoun County Commission since 2011, following the 2010 election, has been 5-2 Republican majority, and I've worked very well across the board. We have accomplished many things collaboratively. We, for example, ensured that the former Calhoun County Road Commission has been amalgamated into the Calhoun County's administration. Now as the Calhoun County Road Department, I think we've brought more roads, more improved, less money spent, more efficiently, and more transparency. So that's an example of what I could do in the state house by reason of my experience in county government. And I do think that experience in a lower species of government, like a county government or a city commission, is very important. Those skills are, I think, tantamount to being a successful legislator. I don't think you can well come from nowhere, like Al Kaline came to the Tigers in 1955 and perform. Al Kaline performed well, but there are other examples like Pete Incaviglia, who came up directly from no minor leagues to the Texas Rangers, I think, about 25 years ago, and didn't perform exceptionally well. And I think I could perform really well because I've had the experience of being on the county board times 8 years.
Jim Hosma, thank you for your time.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm a partner with WMUK, have been so for years. I'm in the 102.1 Club, and I sincerely appreciate the opportunity to participate today.
Jim Hosma is the Democratic candidate for State House in the 62nd District. That includes the cities of Battle Creek and Albion, as well as several townships in Calhoun County. Interviews with the other candidates in the 62nd State House District, Republican John Bison and Libertarian Michelle Gregory, can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Lawrence Winke is a former Kalamazoo County Commissioner and state representative. He held both of those elected positions as a Republican. Winke is running for Congress as a Libertarian in the 6th District in Southwest Michigan, seeking the seat which is currently held by Republican Fred Upton. Lawrence Winke, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for asking me.
So, reintroduce yourself to the audience. Tell us about yourself.
I'm Lawrence Winke. I've been a Kalamazoo resident for most of my years. We spent a couple of years in Boston, Massachusetts. We're a family that owns a greenhouse business in the Kalamazoo area. We're also in southern Georgia. We grow plants in greenhouses and sell them to people. We sell them to big box stores as well. I got interested in politics about 20 years ago when I ran for a county commission seat in Kalamazoo and found that I enjoyed being part of government, part of the political world. So I spent 8 years as a Kalamazoo County Commissioner, 3 years as board chairman. And then I went from there to a Capitol building in Lansing and as a state representative for 6 years. Then was term limited out of that after 6 years and ran for the Senate and got beat in the Republican primary.
And ran for Senate again as a Libertarian two years ago.
Yes.
So what would you like to do if you are elected to Congress?
You know, I've listed three problems that I think are essential to the nation's future. I've put these three issues on my truck signs and I've sent them out to anybody who will listen. And my first priority is the national debt. And I know this is not an exciting topic to talk about. Who wants to think about it for that matter? But for people like me, why in the business world, why we know what debt can do to a business, we know what it does to a nation. Debt ruins businesses and nations and people and families. And our nation is certainly at a critical point in its national debt. Every citizen, every person in America owes $60,000 on the national debt. It's an incredible number. Every family, $240,000. And then on top of that, put in the debts that we owe for our state governments. For a lot of your students who are possibly listening, I think the average debt of a student when they graduate is about $30,000. Add that all up, and that's a tremendous amount of money that is owed to nations overseas that don't like us. It's owed to ourselves, which is probably good. We have a Federal Reserve portion, part of the federal government that literally has, in the past few years, created $2 trillion with a stroke of a computer, a keystroke. This is what we're doing as a nation, and this is an issue that needs to be talked about, needs to be dealt with. And, of course, it's not a popular issue, and the solutions are not easy. And Congressman Upton, who I'm running, who's also running for this seat and currently occupies it, went to Congress about 30 years ago. The national debt at that time was $9,000 per citizen. Today it's $60,000 per citizen. So Congress has spent $51,000 on our behalf and put the bill on our credit card. And well, we need to stop this. This is going to ruin our country. And besides that, it's on my truck signs, it says it's immoral. And it is immoral because we no longer actually plan to pay this debt back. We have no means of paying this debt back. Nobody's even talking about it. When you borrow money and don't plan to pay it back, that's immoral. That's not American. That's not patriotic.
So give me just a couple ideas then. As you say, there are not easy solutions, but what would you propose to get in the direction of balancing budgets and being able to pay back the debt?
Certainly will be a lot of difficult choices. And if I were in Congress, I would work on a package of bills that would all have to be passed at the same time. Tie bar together is what we call it in Lansing. And this package of bills would certainly increase some revenue. Those of us who are getting Medicare for our health care, we get about $3 in benefits for every $1 that we put into the system. So certainly those of us who are taking a lot out of the system are going to have to pay more.
Now, you have a 16-point plan on your website. One of the things you note is that affordable, workable health care is increasingly unavailable without subsidy from taxpayers. You said that that you would work to reduce the cost of health care and require more information about what we pay, increase copays in some situations. But you also say that the cost of caring for sick family members is increasing and bankrupting many people, and you will advocate for a limit on what family members can be expected to pay. If family members have a limit on what they're expected to pay, who picks up the rest of that? Is it the taxpayers?
Well, I don't think that we want to bankrupt families over healthcare expenses. And there may be some cases where drugs and alcohol and obesity and other choices have just ruined healthcare for a family. But before Obamacare became law, there were too many people who did not have health care insurance and couldn't afford it. For those of us on Medicare, I estimate that if we actually went out and bought a policy for those of us on Medicare, it'd be at least $30,000 a year, maybe closer to $50,000 a year if you had to go buy a policy that covers most of us. And even if you want just a basic family policy today, the cost is just too high. I mean, unless you're making $75,000 a year or more, how do you afford a policy for your family that costs $15,000 to $20,000? And very, very difficult.
Here's another point on your 16-point action plan. People are having children that they cannot take care of without taxpayer funds. We are enabling them with generous taxpayer support. You say that you will support free birth control for all citizens, but after 12 months, will discontinue taxpayer support for new babies. What happens to the children who are born after that 12 months of free birth control to a family which cannot afford to take care of them?
We're going to expect people to take care of children that they have, and if they don't take care of them, we're going to do the same thing we do every day today. We put them in foster care. We put them with family members. We do something for these children who their parents are not taking care of responsibly. There's a place for them to go, but this will take a generation or two to have the impact that it needs to have. This will not be easy. This will be very difficult. But it's the number two priority that I have in running for office because we see this happening all the time in the business world that we're in. We've got, what we do is we reward people for having children that they clearly are unable to financially take care of. So I read about what the state of Colorado did. In the state of Colorado, Warren Buffett's wife gave millions of dollars to the state. And she said, go fund what they call long-term reversible contraceptives. And they did that. They've done it for the last 5 years or so. There's been dramatic reductions in abortions, dramatic reductions in children born, quite frankly, to people who aren't responsible enough to take care of them. So it's had a tremendously good effect. We should do it across the nation. It's been tested. It works. And it's the right thing to do. Every time I read about these children who are abused, is in Kalamazoo, we recently had a little girl abused to the, she was murdered by her mother. If we are more responsible in our birth control decisions, we will have fewer children abused by their parents.
Do you still oppose legal abortion?
Yes.
Wouldn't one option be to allow people, if they're pregnant, to terminate the pregnancy so that therefore that child is not born into the circumstances you just described?
That issue has been battled back and forth. The Supreme Court has made a decision. I disagree with the Supreme Court's decision. I don't think abortion should be a choice. It shouldn't be part of my plan anyway. My plan is, as you stated earlier, we will give free birth control to everybody in the nation for as long as there are women around who can get pregnant. They can always get free, long-lasting, reversible contraceptives. But abortion is not part of that. It's not part of my plan.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with Lawrence Wenke, the Libertarian candidate for Congress in the 6th District in Southwest Michigan. The issue over which you parted company most famously, I guess, with the Republican Party was gay marriage. The Supreme Court has now ruled that gay marriage is legal throughout the land. So with that ruling, are there other battles left on the issue of gay rights?
Yes, I consider the war to be finished and the battle won, but there'll still be skirmishes, there'll still be issues, there'll still be particular circumstances where gay rights have to be fought for, and I have continued to do that and plan to continue whenever I get a chance to speak out for equality for our gay family members.
You received nearly 9% of the vote when you ran for state senate 2 years ago as a libertarian. Do you think that there is a chance to do better than that in a congressional district, which after all covers a much wider area?
I would think that it could very well be less, since I'm not very well known outside of Kalamazoo County. So I think that's a factor. But I think a big unknown this year is with the two candidates of the two major parties being as unpopular as they are. Certainly, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, is peace polling in the 9%, 8%. If people vote that way, they may very well vote for every Libertarian on the ballot. And it could even go higher in an election like this, in a year like this.
I have to give you credit for some honesty there of saying it could actually be less than 9%. Yeah. Not a lot of candidates will come in and admit that they may get less than they did previously when that was under 10%. Yeah. So I guess, you know, with that as the template, do you think that you are running to make a larger point? Do you think you're running to perhaps build the Libertarian Party in this part of the state for the future?
I certainly, when I got involved in the Libertarian Party a couple of years ago, it was with the intention of building the party into something into the future. So right now, it's a lot stronger today than what it was a couple of years ago. It's a lot more popular today. The Commission on Debates, which is run by Republicans and Democrats, has kept the minor parties out of the debates. And without being in the debates, it's awfully hard to think of any minor party candidate winning, quite frankly. But times are changing. Who knows what will happen on November 8th of this year? By the time the next election for president comes along, there could be different rules to live by based on the dissatisfaction of a lot of people with the choices we have today and the way that the candidates have been excluded from the debates. The Libertarian Party will be on the ballot in every state of the union, all 50, plus Washington, D.C. That's the first time for that in, I think, about 15 years. And it's the only party that's met that criteria. So I'm looking for some laws to be changed to give the Libertarian Party more of an equal shot at winning elections.
What laws specifically would you change?
That the Commission on Debates would allow candidates to be in the debates based on their potential for getting enough electoral votes to be elected president or something other than a 15% popularity rating.
So in other words, if you're on the ballot in enough states that you could theoretically at least get to 270 electoral votes, you should be on the stage. Is that what you're hinting at?
That'd be one criteria. I'm looking for something that would make it feasible for a smaller party to be part of the process, and that would be one possible criteria that would work.
Lawrence Winke, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Lawrence Winke is the Libertarian candidate for Congress in Southwest Michigan's 6th District. A link to the interview with Democratic congressional candidate Paul Clements can be found at WMUK.org. Republican Fred Upton is scheduled to be interviewed next week, and that is set to air next Thursday. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.